What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Shirley Halperin, executive editor of music, and my guest today is Peter Shapiro, veteran concert promoter, venue owner, magazine publisher, and now author of the just-released book, The Music Never Stops, What Putting On 10,000 Shows Has Taught Me About Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Magic. Although we're based on opposite coasts, Pete and I go way back to his days as the 20-something entrepreneur buying his first club in New York City, the Wetlands, and to my own as an aspiring journalist pounding the pavement while living around the corner from that very club. The Wetlands was a sort of place where fans of the Grateful Dead congregated on any given night, arriving from nearby New Jersey, Long Island, and Connecticut to see bands like Blues Traveler, Spin Doctors, God Street Wine, and Mo, among many, many others. But it also served as an early showcasing space for all kinds of artists you'd never expect to play a tiny Tribeca room. We're talking about like giants of Britpop and grunge, along with so much soul, thanks to frequent appearances by The Roots. Pete went into the Wetlands business after the 1995 death of the Grateful Dead's Jerry Garcia, which is an important benchmark because it left open the question of what would follow in Jerry's spirit, and could a scene be sustained without him? The answer was yes, and Pete Shapiro had bet on it. He acquired another staple of the jam band scene, the Capitol Theater in Porchester, New York, and went on to build the Brooklyn Bowl, a combination concert hall, bowling alley, restaurant that has hosted giants like Robert Plant, rarely seen legends like Ms. Lauryn Hill, and regulars like Questlove. They were all greeted with the same enthusiasm displayed by Pete, the promoter owner, but also the fan. He's the rare business operator who thinks like a musician, or so said another member of the Grateful Dead, Phil Lesh. Still, Pete has seen some low lows along with his very high highs. He nearly went bankrupt not long before he'd staged the penultimate concert of his career, Fare Thee Well, which featured members of The Dead, joined by Phish frontman and guitar virtuoso Trey Anastasio, as well as Bruce Hornsby and Jeff Gementi. It was there, in Santa Clara, California in 2015, on the first of five shows, that a perfect rainbow would appear at the perfect moment, so perfect that some journalists, which is to say one journalist, questioned its origin. Pete's book is based on 50 pivotal shows which helped define his life and guide his business. Today, his portfolio includes several festivals, like Lockin, which is held annually in Virginia since 2013, the magazine Relics, a leading voice of the scene since 1974, film projects, and all manner of content based around hippie principles of the musical kind. And thanks to Fare Thee Well, you can kind of credit Pete with putting into the universe a group like Dead & Company, which just wrapped a U.S. summer tour of stadiums. Featuring John Mayer, it opens up another generation to the Grateful Dead, while also giving the OGs the show they crave. In this episode, we talk about, or rather zip through, Pete's experiences as an entrepreneur and a dreamer, and also get into the complicated history of ticketing, from the pioneering moves of the Dead, who instituted their own mail order system, think verified fan in its analog form, to the more controversial dynamic pricing, which has caused some consternation for Bruce Springsteen and his just announced tour, where seats are going for thousands of dollars. So strap yourselves in, because this magic carpet ride, disguised as a podcast, is a fun one. Join us after the break.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Welcome back to Strictly Business. Here's my conversation with Peter Shapiro.
It's good to talk to you, Halperin.
Let's start with the Wetlands, since that was like sort of the door that opened you to the concert world, to the music industry in general, and then later to media and all kinds of other things. You're going to school at Northwestern in Chicago, a hub of, I would say, hippie activity. There's definitely hubs in America where a lot of sort of like legions of deadheads, I feel like, either congregated or came out of those places. So what was your experience in college that made you think you wanted to go into music?
I had just had one of those moments, a sliding doors moment. If I hadn't gone to a certain Grateful Dead show at Rosemont Horizon in Rosemont, Illinois in March of 1993, I'd probably just be on a different path. That was like a door I opened and got in, went to the show. Somehow they started doing like spoken word. And I swear, I don't know how exactly this happened, but I ended up leaving the show and it was in the parking lot. And I was 20 and I just looked around and saw kids like me, but they weren't going back to Northwestern. They weren't going home. They were on a bus, you know, like drum circles. And I hadn't seen that before. That's the only time I did that, but to do research and like what had been done on this scene that I just saw, and if there are any like documentary films, that's what I was into and studying, and found one film that a sociologist had done, like professor in North Carolina, about Deadhead. But I was like, I'm gonna go out in a couple months.
So you actually discovered the Dead in the 90s?
Yeah, that was 93. My first show was 92, Giant Stadium. The Rosemont was my second one, and then went on a bunch. I went on that tour the summer 93. We started in Auburn Hills in Michigan. We did Buckeye Lake in Ohio, Washington, D.C. So I went out, and I couldn't get the band to be in it, but it was about shooting all the people on the tour. By the way, it was ironic because later on, when I did the Dead 50 reunion, I had this footage. We showed it at halftime when we were doing Circles Around the Sun, the music. I had this cool footage of Dead Tour because it was funny. I couldn't get the Dead to be in it, but I got all the people around the scene, and Ken Kesey and Tim Leary. It's called In Miles to Go. It's on YouTube, I think on the Relics channel if anyone wants to watch it. But I went on tour and made a film about it, and actually led me to the path a little bit, because that is how I met Larry Block. I knew from being on tour just how big this scene was. And when Jerry died, he may be gone, but the music, you know, people's need for this.
Yeah.
Music and fun and shows is not going to go away. So I explored the Wetlands thing because I thought that would be like a natural home for it.
I think that's so interesting as someone who is also, I would consider myself like a full-fledged Deadhead. We are our age, right, Pete? Like, we couldn't have seen the Dead in the early 80s or the late 70s because we were like children and or toddlers even. And when you watch a documentary, like a real completist Grateful Dead documentary, by the time they get to the 90s, it's like, oh yeah, man, the scene was bad, right? People were jumping the gates, and like there was violence, and there were people missing, right, in the parking lot.
Oh, by the way, in Buffalo that happened, and I was there. If anyone out there wants, you can check out that YouTube link. And that one of those crazy climbing the fences scenes I happen to have caught from the beginning. But anyway, sorry.
I just think it's interesting. It was sort of like their last chance, right, to hook in people like you or me, which is to say Gen Xers, right? And they still managed to do it in the 90s when they weren't at their prime, when Jerry was like barely getting through the shows. Like, it still resonated, which this could probably be like an SNL joke about like even bad Grateful Dead sounds good to a Grateful Dead fan.
Right.
But it is interesting just the timing of it all. So let's go to the Wetlands, because I'm going to inject myself into this podcast a little bit, which I don't always do. But since this is a scene that's very close to my heart, I grew up in New Jersey. The beauty of Wetlands was that it was literally on the other side of the
world. It was like literally in New Jersey almost.
Yeah. So if you were like a kid from New Jersey who like going to New York maybe freaked you out or freaked out your parents, the fact that it was literally one right turn from the exit of the Holland was a huge advantage. And that's not to say that the crowd was what they call bridge and tunnel crowd, because it wasn't. It was really just a collective of Deadheads from that whole tri-state area. So tell me what it was. You met Larry Block. Obviously, you're familiar with Wetlands, but what made you really want to have equity in it, plant a stake in it for yourself personally?
It's a good question, because I was just getting started in life, but you get these gut feelings, and the opportunity to take over really a place with such credibility and just everything it represented, I just spotted it. I just knew how unique it was and how much it meant to people, partly because I had been on the Dead tour. That's why I go back to that experience in Chicago at Rosemont Horizon that led me to the film, which led me, like, when Larry Block on Wetlands saw that Dead film, he was like, you're going to be the one, you can take this, you know, and I'll help make it possible. He let me pay him monthly, like over time. And I had just come from being in that world with the Dead tour and just what that scene is like. And Wetlands was the home to that in New York City, ongoing, and New Jersey, and the tri-state, right? It was the home for that world. And I was just like, this is an important place. And even though Jerry's gone, so I took it over in 96, I even more so like this kind of place is needed. And there's going to be other new, younger bands who those people who went on Dead tour, they're going to need that fix.
Right.
Of live music. It's not going to go away. Just Jerry's gone. You know, it won't be seeing the Grateful Dead, but it might be going to see String Cheese or Modesky Martin and Wood, the Biscuits or Mule, or, you know, a lot of other things that then got elevated out. Moe and Umphrey's. Those bands, if you look back, really expanded in a weird way because Jerry Garcia had passed away.
And also because the wetlands existed. Seriously, because the wetlands was the physical sort of club manifestation of what drew the scene to the music and to each other. Like, let's describe wetlands a little bit for our listeners. It was how many square feet?
It was only like 7,500, 8,000 square feet. I swear.
So that's a capacity of like a few hundred people, probably, right?
I mean, well, you know, wetland, it depends what day you're asking. Okay, that one. No. It was like a concrete hippie jungle daydream. And it was a home, obviously, for the hippies, but hip hop heads loved it, ska, punk. On a weekend, we could do four shows in 24 hours, like on a 2 days. From Saturday morning, I guess more like 36 hours. We do a ska show at 2 o'clock on a Saturday into like a jam band, Grateful Dead kind of thing that night. The next morning, we do like hardcore, agnostic front, that kind of thing, and go late night for a lot. We had The Roots Sunday nights.
Wow.
And Black Lily. So we would do a weekend with those four, a ska show, a hippie show, a hardcore show, and a hip hop show, soul show. And so it was like a church, you know, when you have that many people going through it, everyone looking for the same thing, to get that feel that you can only really get at a live music show and a great venue. When you start doing that and just do hundreds and hundreds and thousands of shows, having great moments, the air in a venue changes, I think, and it gets easier to get to magic the more you've had the magic in there. So I've been fortunate now to get to do, like, I when I'm building the new venues, the new Brooklyn Bowls and stuff, I know that, like, it's still got some wetlands based on who we book and just the energy and the feel in the wood, you know, do two sets when we can, because that helps. That set break is also so great for people to, like, interact,
right,
and meet people and talk to people. One thing about wetlands, when it was sold out, not everyone can see the show. That force you, remember, you go to the basement and hang out, you could hear it. So it was always a great place. It wasn't the best place and maybe ever to see a show,
sightline wise.
Well, say, yep, that's the word. Not everyone could see it when it was sold out. It's not ideal, you know, we fixed that. But by the way, the people that couldn't, you'd go to the bar, you'd go downstairs, you'd be hanging out, you could hear it, and you'd meet your wife or your future husband or a boyfriend. I'm not kidding, because you could. I met a lot of people who, like, yo, dude, I met my wife at Wetlands.
So, Pete, I'm sure it didn't take long into your career for someone to say, you're the next Bill Graham.
Yeah.
How did you actually step into the Bill Graham role?
One big part was the Wetlands and taking that, deciding to lean into doing that. And there have been a couple times of you'll be at like a four, taking over Relic, deciding to go for the Capitol Theater and sign the league. When I took over Relics, a lot of people, and like it was 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And when I was like, I'm taking over Wetlands, and a lot of people are like, what are you doing, dude? And you just got to choose, you know. And a couple times, I'm really glad that I've leaned into the harder road, but the road where you're like, I want to go there. And then you just do what it takes. I've almost gone down. It's in the book a couple times. You know, one's really close. By the way, I think you have to get that close sometimes. There's a saying that if you don't lose money in the first year of a festival, that you actually maybe haven't done it right. And you have to survive long enough to then, once you get going and get the reps or get up the hill a bit, it gets easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it ever gets easy. And by the way, when you do this, putting on shows, I figured out from doing the book, I've done 10,000 of them. Yeah, I wasn't at everyone, but if something went wrong, I'd get the call. It's still hard, Shirley.
So when you decided to do Brooklyn Bowl, did that coincide with purchasing Relics, taking over Relics?
Yes. Those two things happen pretty much simultaneously.
I think it's very strategic. Like, you have a magazine, the magazine has a website, you have a megaphone to reaching this very specific audience. You know exactly what they want. It's not like, oh, I'm going to open a new venue in New York because there's only 12 and the city can sustain 18. It's not like that. It's really well thought out. But I also wanted to bring up, you know, one thing that Wetlands and Brooklyn Bowl had in common, or another thing they had in common, is that they were a neighborhood that had yet to be gentrified, that were really, like, sparsely lived in. There weren't a lot of people living there. Tribeca in New York before it became Tribeca, and then Williamsburg, which was basically one of the more rundown areas of Brooklyn, but very conveniently located to Manhattan.
It was also about the building. Like, my experience is a lot of this lead with, like, the specific real space and go from there. Obviously, Williamsburg as well is just right across, the closest thing across the river. I'm surprised more stuff wasn't there, actually, if you just think about what's the closest thing to Manhattan. And there was other stuff there, but not really where we were. We were in northern Williamsburg. We were early. We got in kind of like Brooklyn Brewery is way before us, but we did kind of get in at the end of the early. It's wild to see now there's like four hotels within a block or two of us. By the way, if Wetlands hadn't closed, we lost our lease and it got converted and went to condos. But like, even if we had a lease that went a little longer, the way the whole neighborhood, like you're saying, went from manufacturing and late night and some bars to these buildings being converted from that commercial use to like residential, all that corridor, it wouldn't have been, you know, that's what's tough, like doing this live music thing. I'm so glad I got, you know, Brooklyn Bowl when I did. And also it'd be harder now just to cut through all the stuff flying around. We're doing new venues, but I'm a little more established. But back then in 09, it was like The Sopranos was the big show. Now there's like 100 shows, big shows, and podcasts like that. You know what I mean? That stuff didn't exist. There was no TikTok. There was no Snapchat in 09. There was maybe Facebook. Twitter was just starting. And listen, that goes both ways. We now have a Brooklyn Bowl's got a TikTok account. When you have a big show, you and I could come up with a show right now, and we can almost do a show with a giant act tomorrow at Brooklyn Bowl because we're already planning to be open. But just on a promo level, you just post it. Tickets on sale in 2 hours or tonight or tomorrow morning, and then it shows that, like, back in the day of Wetlands in the 90s when we would get like last second Hootie and the Blowfish show. I remember that one. That's when they were giant, though. You couldn't turn on the dime at 24 hours because you couldn't post it in 97. So you'd have to call Q104 or WNEW, like get it out on the radio and flyer it. Hit it hard, like flyering, radio, obviously pulling that in the voice.
It again makes me think like, wow, how smart that you owned a magazine because they still needed to advertise those records.
Yeah.
I was impressed with Relic. As a magazine person who's worked at a lot of magazines, I recognized that Relics is its own brand, even when you bought it, and was very impressed that you went there. Like, honestly, Pete, it was a very smart move. It's not, we're not talking about tens of millions of dollars here. This is small money.
Yeah, and you know, we don't do culture.
Right.
Which is important. Musicians. I'm not saying our politics, it's only music. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of how many reviews we do, and we only do music, and we're broadening, you know, we've just had War on Drugs on the cover, Lumineers, Jack White, but we're doing Jerry's 80th, and this, you know, Billy Strings.
How many Brooklyn Bowls are there now, Pete?
There's New York, Philly, Nashville, and Vegas, so four of those.
There's gonna be another Chicago one. Is that still in the
world? Well, it's a Chicago Garcia's coming.
Garcia's
sooner. So yeah, that's gonna come. That's gonna happen. Obviously, I got the Capitol Theater.
Right.
And there's a Garcia's up there, but we're going to build a cool Garcia's like seated venue, kind of jazz club structure style.
Got it.
I'm excited about that. And I've got this studio in New York where we shoot a lot of streams that was the Jazz Standard on 27th Street. It was a classic jazz club that stopped operating during COVID. So I took it over. We actually have a place that's built for a band to come in and just stream live their performance.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more from Peter Shapiro.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back with Peter Shapiro. I mean, the pandemic obviously really impacted the live music industry. I mean, I think you and I were speaking a lot during the pandemic, and there were definitely some moments where it was like, I don't know if we're going to make it another month or another quarter or whatever it was. And then at the same time, you lost a lot of young people during that time who didn't get to experience what a concert was. Like maybe they were 12 and now they're 14. And those are very like pivotal years to open someone's mind and eyes to a live experience. Talk to me about the pandemic in general, how Brooklyn Bowl weathered the pandemic. And what does it mean for like the Gen Zers? Do they know what concerts are?
Well, I hope we're near the end. You know, you keep thinking we're done and then stuff happens. We're seeing people come back, but then it can get crazy like it did last Christmas. And I feel for these kids. You know, I have them who are in that age that you're talking about who lost something. But people are resilient. Hopefully they've adjusted, don't get too addicted to that screen. That's why I do these kids shows. It's a little bit for younger. I'm trying to get the Rock and Roll Playhouse where we're doing shows, but in a rock club. So the Bowl in New York or like the Sinclair in Boston, Talia Harrell Hall in Chicago. We did Troubadour in LA or Boulder Theater. And on a Saturday or Sunday at noon, we know they're not doing much. First Avenue in Minneapolis. And we do a tribute to a different band each time. So each show, one show is just a tribute to Springsteen or a tribute to Marley, tribute to the Dead. We usually start with the Dead. Just that's my people. And then we meet a Dead cover band. And once you can play Dead songs, you can probably play Beatles and then Marley. And we get a fun band, Parachute Shakers. And it's music. Parents bring their two-year-olds, say 3, 4, 5. These kids are not self-conscious yet. So they rock out. They're not worried about anyone looking and seeing them fucking fisting and just rocking out. It's unbelievable. And their parents are very pleased.
Let's talk about your crowning achievement, Fare Thee Well. I would say that's a crowning achievement. Would you agree?
I'll take it. You know, going into it, I knew if it goes well, it's my crowning achievement. And if it doesn't go well, I'm fucked.
It was so special. And I was so thankful that I was able to break news of its like being in the works and to sort of encapsulate what it was. I mean, for someone like me who loved the Grateful Dead, also loved Phish, especially in college and coming out of those years. So it was members of the Dead, Mickey Hart, Bill Kreutzmann, Bob Weir, Phil Lesh with Trey Anastasio from Phish.
Chimenti and Hornsby. Double keys.
It was three.
Double keys.
And we'll get to the rainbow in a second. So it was three nights in Santa Clara and two in Chicago at Soldier Field. These are giant, giant venues. It had been a minute since I'd been in a stadium when I walked into that one. Maybe that had something to do with how hazy my head was. Anyway, it was amazing. They didn't have a ton of time to rehearse. I know you had a lot of time to sort of execute your vision, but musically, it almost seemed like a little bit of a risk. Was it?
Well, I mean, I grew up going to a lot of Phish shows and Dead shows. So for me, I felt strongly that Trey playing that part would be fire. Yeah, the Jerry would be fire. I've seen him a lot. Yeah, it just wasn't that much of a stretch for me. Now, musically, nor also the demand-wise, because the Grateful Dead had never sold an online ticket at that point because Jerry died in August of 95, and the first online ticket by Ticketmaster in the U.S. for a concert was 1996. So they didn't start till after Jerry was gone. So you don't really know sometimes. I mean, a lot of stuff I've learned, like people will tell you, and if you listen, you'll hear them say the word think. Hey, Pete, I don't think going to do this. This is a good idea. I'm thinking of Barella. I think you don't know, right? You don't know what, because there's no, they had never sold a ticket on them. And you didn't really know how big the demand would be. I thought big. So we do the on sale. We're on the phone with Ticketmaster. They say there's more people on the queue online for the noon on sale. It was like 11:50. And then for any other concert they've ever done, other than the Led Zeppelin, which was at in London a few years before the reunion. Mm. But for a US concert, that's pretty interesting little tidbit of like how big that dead audience kind of maybe really is. And then it just blew out. Usually a sellout's great news, but when it's just an instant blow, you know, look at what's going on now today, it's still an issue today, ticketing and all that. And we tried to do everything. We did the mail order.
They were pioneers in that. They were the first mail order band to really just make that a business.
Yep. So we brought it back. Then the post office takes a few days for stuff to start showing up. And then I remember they're like, it showed up and there's like 60,000. I mean, just crazy. So then it was really responding to the crazy. So a big part of my life's just been trying to fix things from going wrong. Luckily, you were there. You know, the weather just went all right. And that impacted my life in the rainbow, right? Yeah. Just coming out. In the beginning, because there was a lot of hazardry around this thing and will it work? Will it work musically? Is it, you know, Jerry's not here. And then that first set happened in Santa Clara. And at the end of the set, Viola Lee Blues, the last song, it wasn't even raining. You saw it was just like purpley in the sky. And then all of a sudden you heard that remember that rumble of people? Mm-hmm. You pointed, you could hear the noises of people being like, yo, look at that rainbow. Look at the rainbow.
Everyone was, you know, pointing, basically.
Yeah.
Let's get into this, Pete. Rainbow Gate. I said earlier that, like, I hadn't been to a stadium show in a while, and I was a little sort of, like, mesmerized by the sheer size of that place. You know, I don't go to football games. If I do see a stadium show, it's like The Weeknd, where it's more of, like, a video show than actual people. So there was something kind of strange about the size of the venue, how small it looked from, like, across from where I was sitting, but how big it actually was. So that's my preface. Also prefacing this with a giant facepalm emoji. So when this rainbow popped up, it looked so perfect. It looked too perfect. I was like, how is this happening at this exact moment? And it wasn't the first time people had looked up to the sky, because earlier there had been a plane that was making out the shape of a peace sign with the jet fumes. It wasn't such a crazy idea to think that there was some shenanigans going on in the skies to make it more entertaining for the people there. But here's where you and I, and this is, by the way, everyone, the introduction.
I like listening.
This is the introduction to Pete's book is describing the events of this day of Rainbow Gate, which I texted you, Pete, and was like, what the hell is this? And you, just being Pete, were messing with me and said,
well, no, at
you
first I think
it.
I said it was a rainbow. Didn't go right to there. I said first, like, what is this? I'm like, a rainbow? And Halpern's like, come on, no way. And I was like, no, a rainbow. And you're like, no way. And then I think I said, yes, okay, I paid $50,000 for it.
Yeah, that's, and here, this is the journalist in me, where it's like, when someone tells me something, I just take it as fact. You're telling me you have the information, you are legitimate, you are credible, that is credible. So yeah, I'm embarrassed to say, because I was proud of myself that I went into the 49ers press room to bang out a story between the sets. And I wasn't sure that I was going to get that done, because it was a long day and a long drive and a long way into the venue and all those things. And I was pretty wiped out, but I did it. And then by the morning, I realized.
Yeah, never forget waking up. Reuters pick, because they had a deal, right? Billboard and Reuters. And I think your story, which at the end said, you know, there's even talk that maybe Pete Shapiro paid for the rainbow of $50,000.
Yeah.
More details to come or something. Stay tuned. And it, Reuters picked it up, and then it ran in some wires. And then some headline writers started saying, Grateful Dead, do they fake rainbow? And just by the time we woke up that next morning, because like Europe picked it up, like, you remember that? It was everywhere.
Oh my God. My really phone was like blowing up with CNN asking if I could come on the air. I mean, talk about like the worst way.
There are pictures. We got to the stadium and they were like pictures of me, like rainbow oil, man. Like,
oh yeah,
oh, it's still with me, by the way. I go walking down like in an airport. This happens once a week.
What?
For sure.
What happens?
Someone will be like, yo bro, yo, is the rainbow real?
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, I didn't tell you. Oh yeah, I still get that for sure.
But you had the best line for it, Pete. What was your just beautiful,
oh yeah,
well, perfect,
when they were like,
quote,
was it man-made? Yeah, I have it, right? It was, did someone make the rainbow? Was it real or was it man-made? And I was like, no, it was man-made. Jerry Garcia made it.
Jerry Garcia was, and, that man.
And actually when it happened, I was standing at the, by the front of the house, turned to Trixie Garcia, Jerry's daughter, was next to me. And I was like, yeah, that's it's your dad, right? She's like, yep. That was a peak moment for me.
I'm glad we got that out of the way. If Fare Thee Well was happening today, would you be engaging in this dynamic pricing thing that Bruce Springsteen is dealing with?
Good question. That'd be up to the band. Ooh, good answer. Like that.
Explain the really considerations that go into that, because this is obviously like
right. But if we sent tickets at $250 a ticket, some up front would be trade you could sell for $1,000. So the argument is the band should make that $750 extra, not someone who's trading tickets, whether it's a scalper or a human. They're just like, if that ticket's people will pay $1,000 for, the artist should just get the money. Or you could set it at a flat number. There's ways, and I don't know, you know, how successful it's been. I think it works. Verified fan, you can do. Which is like set all the tickets at 250 or 350 or wherever. And then you're not supposed to be able to trade, sell the ticket. You got to be that person whose name bought the ticket, verified fan.
Right. I think those verified fans were like getting shut out of that sale and then went and looked and saw that the market demand had driven it to 4,000, 7,000. How does that happen? What is happening?
Well, income inequality, there's too many rich people. You know, I'll give you another big part of it. I think how much more Springsteen and E Street, they haven't played in 5 years. They're not going to see Springsteen a lot more. You're just not. And so the demand, there's a lot of people with money. They'll pay for, you know, for that once in a lifetime, maybe the last Bruce show. I mean, maybe there'll be another tour, but you're not going to be like 30, 20 more years of it. Same with the Stones, and McCartney's 80, or Billy and Elton's on his final tour. So the people will pay a lot premium to see these acts, I think. And it's a tough call. Do you just say, yeah, dynamic, it's the public, and then you get these crazy numbers and piss people off? Or do you take less, but maybe other people make that money, that spread? Can you refine this verified fan thing so that the real fans can buy and attend without complication? I don't know, but should you be able to trade to your brother? Little things like that.
Yeah.
Being able to like give it to your brother, get complicated. I wish it was more simple, but a fundamental thing is just the tickets are worth $1,000. Should the artist charge $250 just to let some cooler people or people that couldn't afford the $1,000 be able to have that ticket in that location? Should they take the cut? That's why I said it's up to the art. You know, I think we'll see more and more or now different artists doing different things. And I know Landau came out and had his explanation. They felt some of the tickets. I don't know what was the ratio, you know, that was dynamic and not.
Yeah, he said that like 11% of the tickets that were sold were dynamic and the vast majority were in that 250 range.
Right. But the only thing is probably the P1s, which are the best tickets. It'd be interesting to see what the allocation of that 11,000 is. People will have to be careful with that. You know, we'll do dynamic, but we're going to do them all over the arena versus just up front. Let's say the band member's like, well, I want to get some of this extra money.
Yeah.
Don't you want to do some dynamic? Well, so what would you do? No dynamic? Just all flat?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, yeah. I don't
You're
know
You're the
either,
expert.
That's good. This is hard. Yeah. This, I just don't know the venues, bro. You know?
No, you said it before. These issues with ticketing and service fees and what's right and what's wrong, these have been around for decades. I still remember the hearings from the 90s with Pearl Jam. And Pearl Jam really did try to do it differently. They really did try to go to different rooms that weren't controlled by the giant corporation. And it didn't really work out. I'm so glad that you wrote your book with Dean Budnick, who really gets it and has an amazing book called Ticketmasters.
With Josh Baron.
Yes.
Former editor of Relics.
Relics.
Exactly. Of Relics. And that is a big reason I decided to do this is Dean, because of his knowledge of the industry and was at a lot of these shows. So the book's 50 shows.
Right.
And Dean was at half of a lot of them. So he was like, you ever write anything down? Like, no. And then COVID became a good time to do it. You know, there wasn't out every night. I'm really glad I did it now. Because, you know, after a test, when you take like a physics test or algebra, it was hard and you're done and you're like, I can forget like half that now or forget it all. You know, I feel kind of good looking at this book. It's here and be like, shit, now I can forget a lot of that.
Your memory is actually astoundingly good. All those details. I don't know how you remember those. Like, were you journaling? Like, I don't know how you did that, dude.
Well, we did it over like a few years. Mm-hmm. So like things come back to you. Like if this would have been like, you got to do this in 4 months or 6 months, it wouldn't have worked as well. Dean helped. He was around. He did the Wetlands movie. He wrote the book on jam band. It's also like the story of a bunch of stuff. The jammies are seen. And you know what helps? The internet. Because a bunch of the book is right. It's 50 different shows, the dates, the set list, who played that without the internet. That's a good part of the internet. You know, looking back, right? And be like, who was at that power jam at Wetlands on November 12th, 1998, like Bernie Wore, like, so it was like a triangulation of my brain, my memory, Dean's memory, and the internet. And hopefully we got it pretty good.
I wanted to ask just if you could tell the story of your son and show and tell at school.
It was show and tell day. He's like 5 years old and he had a picture of Soldier Field, Chicago. And he pulled it up and said, this is what my dad does. It's called Grateful Dead. And he does Grateful Dead. That's pretty good. That.
Like, imagine trying to explain to a father.
I gotta find that video. This is what he does. This is my dad. And he does Grateful Dead for a living.
All right. One other thing from the book. Was it Phil Lesh who said that you think like a musician?
I can have a pretty good feel from jammies and doing Phil and Friends, the Bowl Lives of like, let's try this artist with this artist. And that's a little bit maybe like my instrument when we did Questlove and Phil and Buddy Guy and John Mayer, or we did Travis Tritt with the Biscuits, or we do Peter Frampton with Guster, or last night Warren Haynes played with Ann Wilson at the Capitol, and we're still doing all that at the Bowls, and I love that we're not Phil Lesh playing 9 shows at the Cap in October, and we've got some new cool people playing with him for the first time, and that's what I try to do is like and bring some of these people from the jam scene. I got some good stuff coming. So that's just how the music keeps going.
I was just going to say that Dead & Company is really indebted to Fare Thee Well for opening up the concept of members of the Grateful Dead playing Dead songs in some other calculation.
Yeah, no, it was supposed to be the end, an ending of sorts. And what was cool is it ended up being like a new beginning of another phase.
Yeah.
It's been a really big phase.
Really
of Grateful
big.
Dead. But it's been great to like see a lot of parents who come up, think so much, you know, because they bring their kids to the show. And it's why there's new bands, you know, like Goose and Twiddle or Marcus King, you know, or Pigeon Playing Ping Pong. There's like a whole next generation 4.0. Billy Strings, look at him. He's playing a that comes a little bit off of this Dead world. And it does help that like people can bring their 19-year-old back to that Rock and Roll Playhouse thing. When you're young, if you can go to shows, I think then you become a live music lover and you'll go to other shows. You're going to then go to more shows.
I mean, Pete, who knew that you would trade in live music from the cradle to the grave? Like, seriously.
Now you're getting heavy, bro. Well, I try not to think about it too much. I just keep doing it. You know?
Just keep going. Exactly. Well, you should be very proud. The book is a great read. The music never stops. What putting on 10,000 shows has taught me about life, liberty, and the pursuit of magic. Thanks for tuning in to Variety Strictly Business. This episode was edited by Jessica Chalvoy. Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes featuring conversations with media movers and shakers. Also, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.